Welcome to Making a Band 101, my comprehensive guide to getting your musical project from your head and your plans to on the stage and in your community. This podcast is designed for individuals and groups that are either new to musical performance or re-energizing their project. All 7 episodes are chock full of industry tips, tricks, and secrets, and will give you the knowledge and the confidence to create success in a robust musical portfolio. I'm Drew Jones, and I can't wait to get you in my head and give you all the essential knowledge I've obtained in a 20-plus year music career with thousands of onstage hours and a performance portfolio. Without further ado, let's get into it. The first time we were ever late as a band was when we were playing in the Saddle Dome for the Calgary Flames intermission performances during the playoffs in 2022. Every night there were 17,000 people packing the stands as the Flames got into second round playoffs, chasing that Stanley Cup, and we were the band, the only band, that took these in-game performances during the intermissions. And it was a really special time for us. I'll never forget, 4 of us from the band went to see a friend who was working up in the private boxes because she was a good bud and she would give us some free beers and whatnot. And we go up to see her, and the game was moving very quickly. There were very, very few calls. So, you know, without the whistle going off, the 20-minute period was just flying by. And the promotions team needed us at our kind of little stage area on the side of the bowl there to play within 6 minutes from our little set time. And I'll never forget looking at the clock, and one of our band members, Kat, was like, "Hey, I think we need to get back. The period seems to be going pretty quickly." And we're like, no, we got time. We look back at the clock a few minutes later, and there's like literally 2 minutes left before the period ends, and the 4 of us look at each other like, oh my God, and we start sprinting. We start sprinting down the outer end of the Saddle Dome, and the whole thing kind of looks the same, right? These stadiums, unless you're looking at the numbers above where the seats are and how you get into the bowl, it's like we thought we were running in the right direction. We get up into where we thought we're supposed to be playing in the stands, and we look up to where the stage should have been from where we were on the stairs. And one of these older ushers, I'll never forget this moment, it was so funny, he looked at us shaking his head with this like, oh my God, no, look in his eyes, and he's pointing across the Saddle Dome, and he's like, "You're in the wrong spot." He's mouthing it to us, "You're supposed to be over there." And we all look, we realized we had ran to the opposite side of the Saddle Dome to where the stage was. So as the whistle and as the horn is going, and as my phone is blowing up with Imogen, Ethan, and Mike being like, "Where are you guys? Get here now." We rip over and we start running through the concourse again. So we had this real Home Alone moment where we're just running as fast as we can, and we get up to where the stage area is, and some of the, you know, in-game marketing team is there, and Mudge, Mike, and Ethan are shaking their heads. They're so mad. And luckily for us, they had, you know, rescheduled those little promotional moments so that we would play a little bit further into the period break. And anyways, we ended up rocking out and having a great time, and then everything was fine for the second period break and life was good. You know, we apologized in an email after the fact and had a high five with the team, you know, later that evening before we did the after game performance, and it was good. And truly, this was the first time we'd ever been late for any type of gig. And I'll never forget Ethan, our bass player. He was so stressed out, and he was pretty mad after the fact. He's like, "Guys, we're never late." He's like, "And I can't believe you were late for this, you know?" And then we're all laughing because we're like, dude, if we were ever going to be late, it was going to be for something like this. And I share this story at the top of the podcast because one of the key criticisms of bands is that they're late, right? It's something that you'll hear as you go along. It's, you know, we're prone to being late because we're artists and we're not always perfectly scheduling our time, or we get caught up, or we didn't realize the drive to the venue was going to be like this, or cable breaks when you get there and the set time is delayed, or yada, yada, yada. So yeah, obviously there's lots of strings attached to performing and to kind of setting into an evening. But that being said, it's often a common, you know, criticism or feedback about bands is that you're always late, or that there was a lot of ego, or that they weren't accommodating, or that they thought the world revolved around them, and the list goes on, right? So as we jump into talking about the mentality of a group and how you should position yourself in, let's say, your worldview of what it means to be a performer, I wanted to start by sort of abolishing these ideas, these rock star ideas. And the way my group positioned ourselves in our mentality is we often still do call ourselves the not a band. because we would learn about these stereotypes and these stigmas that were held about bands in the community. And we saw it firsthand because we're vibing with our buds and we're vibing with people that we're getting to know in venues. And if we're building bills with bands, we're learning it firsthand. And, you know, I'm booking at venues and I'm learning it firsthand. And it's all these little nuances that are really difficult to work with around, like the ego, being on time, being entitled, being, you know, really self-centered, not being accommodating. These are things that we decided, hey, we want nothing to do with that. We don't want to behave. If that's what a band is, we don't want to be a band. We're going to be a not a band. And the other WTF about this that I've never really understood or I don't appreciate is the fact that, you know, we're doing this as artists for the love of the music. If the music comes first and we truly love this, why are we allowing ourselves to become affected by all these other strings attached? And I understand that there can be some major deal breakers within the context of an evening or a series of events that are leading up to a performance and how we're behaving within those nuances. And believe it or not, I've been there. I have played where the sound guy was super drunk and he left with a lady halfway through the set and half the sound on the stage disappeared because of a power issue. And we're playing for 20 minutes in a massive tent for a massive crowd with only half the stage working. And then the dude comes back with this chick and he fumbles around on the soundboard, kind of gets it working, and the show goes on. And I'll never forget specifically in that gig, as I was very frustrated. I was playing piano in this band, and my group had opened first, and then I came on piano for the second part, and we're playing with a really well-known blues artist up here in Canada, and his name was Rick. And I'll never forget, in the midst of the break, I'm rocking out and I'm kind of mouthing to him in the moment, because the crowd is obviously very aware something's going on, and other players that were in the room that we knew were also kind of losing their shit on the side because the sound guy was completely crapping the bed. And so there's some frustration happening in the crowd. There's just a vibe that's taking place. And I'm looking at Rick being like, dude, what are we supposed to do? And I remember he leans over to me. He's playing guitar. He leans over to me. He's like, your job is to play the music. Don't worry about this. Play through it. Put a smile on your face. Keep rocking out. So that was in like a literal song break there where, you know, the soloist is going off in the corner and him and I have this little moment together. And this is one example of a worst case scenario that really could have defined what it meant for me to work in that context. And I didn't let it affect me. And throughout the years, we've had dozens of experiences like this. And what we learned was, you know, putting our best foot forward, working through it in the moment, being solution oriented, being hopeful were the attributes we wanted in the midst of the issue, but also post issue as well. And obviously, if there are real deal breakers that have happened, then we'll politely cut ties with whatever that situation is for, you know, a future gig or otherwise. But, you know, we didn't allow the hardships that were around us and the more like toxic behaviors or mentalities of other people affect us. And so the very key behavior or thought process that happens, I believe, that really sets in to long-term artists that create this rock star moment, like outside of potential local fame or a larger scale fame or notoriety or whatever this might be for an artist, because that can happen and that can create these moments of like huge ego that might cause this person or group of people to become difficult to work with because they're really up on a high horse. But aside from that, because that doesn't happen much to us in the local or smaller gigging portfolios or building momentum, but what can happen and what we need to safeguard ourselves from is being entitled. So I think entitlement really is that key mentality that we need to work against as we're growing, as we're learning. And what we need to replace it with is a sense of curiosity, a sense of adventure, and a sense of equality, and a sense of a high value for customer service. I think there's no room for an entitled rock star in a startup moment or in a local scene. And I actually think there's no room for a rock star mentality in the highest echelons of music and performance. Where the rock star moment needs to happen is on the stage, and only on the stage. It should never come off the stage into how we treat people and how we handle ourselves and how we approach specifically difficult situations, but even worse than that, the good situations. And so be the rock star, have the ego moment, flex as hard as you can on that stage. But when you come off, you are you, and you are customer service oriented. And essentially, if we're not a band and we're not rock stars after off the stage, what are we? Believe it or not, I believe what you are is a contractor. And this is going to be a WTF. As you're listening to this, you'll be like, Drew, this sounds nerdy and weird, and what do you mean a contractor? Well, believe it or not, you are usually being hired in as third party to a venue, right? You're a partner, you're being hired third party to an event, you're being hired third party to whatever the musical environment is. As you grow as a band, you might find that you're accumulating a lot more on stage gear, you have more stake in your on and off stage sound. But regardless of additional logistics that might start to become part of your show and your performance, even from the very fundamental idea that a venue is hiring you to come in and play a set with two or three other bands, you are essentially a contractor. You're being hired as an addition to the evening, and your job is to bring your product to that stage for as much as required on and off stage to satisfy what the contractual agreement might be. And it might be just a simple email that was like, hey, you're going to play for 45 minutes and you're going to probably go around, you know, 10 o'clock because you're the third band and play till 10:45. And or the contract might be way more extensive with a rider and all these other details attached. And but yeah, at the end of the day, as performing artists, I believe our defining title is that we are all contractors. When we think of a contractor, we're often thinking of the construction world, right? Like my buddy runs a construction company and they contract out all these jobs throughout the year. And so your buddy running that construction contracting company, what's his goal? His goal is to build a crew that can sustain various contracts and make as much money and build and grow across contracts and hold contracts and continue relationships and keep that small business humming along throughout the year. And when they become a trusted contractor with a great reputation and all the strings attached as per marketing website, yada, 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 you can see that, you know, they're going to create this amazing longevity in their local business. And so you got to ask yourself, how is a band any different? Think about it. Your venues are basically hiring multiple contractors at any given time, aka bands. Again, if you start to acquire a lot more gear and you start to create your own show, our band has all of our own sound gear. We have full PA, lights, everything we would need. We can bring our show basically anywhere. So truly, we are a contractor. And at the highest level, right, you got the Justin Timberlakes of the world and the Lady Gagas of the world. Even right now, the best example, because Taylor Swift's blowing up, she brings her own show, right? She's, and again, some of us might be annoyed by this idea of entrepreneurialism attached to art, and I totally get that, and we can talk about that a little bit in this lesson as well, but the idea is, you know, we want to run our show. We want to have, you know, autonomy and interdependence to do what we do best. And so realistically, like the company that is in construction, or, you know, use whatever reference point you think works the best for you, but we are contractors and we are going to position ourselves to sustain a lot of work in different working environments, aka venues or other streams of performance opportunity. And so that's where this, I think a lot of our mentality needs to derive from, this idea that we are going to sustain a great market, so to speak, for our product based on contractual agreements and based on a high level of customer service. And so if you're the type that hates hearing that you need to be an entrepreneur, that you have to have this energy in order to be a thriving live musician or live performer, then I've got the right sort of solution to that issue in your mind. And that is the fundamental starting place for all of us, whether we want to be the musical entrepreneur or we don't want to be that person. Where we all need to start is with the love of music. And I've talked to a lot of people who are truly that artistic space cadet, so to speak, who, you know, they're like, Drew, I don't want to approach this like somebody who's running a company. I just want to play my music for people. I just want to rock out. And so I say, okay, well, harness that passion, learn harder how to articulate it a little bit, and lead with that as you're looking for opportunity and as you're sort of preaching the gospel, if you will, of what your band is about and what your music's about. And that passion and that truly artistic mentality will permeate the relationship. You will inspire people. You will give them your vision for how you want to light that stage up and bring this amazing music that you've created to the crowd and to everyone else that's involved. And so the solution to not caring about this entrepreneurial or contractual, you know, mentality is actually also the starting point of that mentality, which is start always with your love of music. Lead with the love of music and iron out everything around you so that the music can flourish on the stage. If the love of music is our highest value, then our second highest value needs to be the stage itself. And the stage needs to be sacred ground, basically. It should never be a place of conflict. It should never be a place, if possible, of stress. It should be bliss. It should be like nirvana. It should be a place where our group flow state can happen, where we lock in together, we experience creativity together, we experience all these amazing moments. And, you know, this highlights the need to have all your gear organized, all your logistics kind of leading up to the stage, more or less being taken care of, you know, asking the right questions, setting the right precedent for the night in terms of timing and whatnot. It should also set a precedence for how all the band members are coming to the stage and just kind of letting go. And, you know, the cares of our world will be carried with us on the stage. And I know firsthand that when life is really, really hard, you feel reluctant sometimes to go and play the show, and you just want to stay home and hermit. You don't want to be in front of the people or whatever that is. But I also know that once you get up there, it's a freeing moment and the cares of the world can be let go. And you're looking across your left and right, or you're looking down the stage at your buds that are with you, your bros that are there, and we're all getting lost in the music together. That's one of the most freeing things we can experience. And so we want to keep it that way. We want to keep the stage as the sacred ground that we all enjoy. And so a key rule that I've had in my gigging portfolio for my whole life is that leave criticisms that happen on the stage for when your emotions come down. A nice rule to set and a nice practicality around this idea is don't bring up criticisms for about 3 days. That might seem like a long time, but the evening after a gig, whether someone realized they're screwing up or not, and sometimes we're oblivious to the fact that we're just missing a very obvious note in a song, and the entire band was kind of furious about this in a moment, been there, done that. It's like, you know, the evening of, you just want to leave it because homie's on, you know, he's riding the clouds and he's loving life. You know, the day after, we're reminiscing on how much fun we had. The high might be there a little bit. We're seeing the stuff on the social media go up and we're kind of reliving those moments. By day two, it's like, hey, I'm back at work. You know, it's Monday now. And by day three, it's Tuesday and I'm getting a phone call from you know, Lane, because she's like, hey, Drew, you screwed up, man. And I just wanted to bring this to your attention that I don't know if you realize this was happening, but here's what we're dealing with in those moments. And, you know, what's going on, bro? And then I'm like, okay, fair enough. This is why that happened. I totally missed that note, like the whole song, and I can see how that's annoying for all y'all. We'll fix that, easy fix. Let's get on to the next one. And so this idea of how appropriately we highlight criticisms from a stage moment is really creating the context for group flow state. You will start to notice as a band that you'll start to lock in. We talk about this all the time after a show. When did you lock in? There are some shows where we lock in on song one, where we're just synced up. It's like, you know, we've been gigging for a few days in a row and we hit the stage and it's just magic from the moment. I notice with our group, if we're coming in for our first show after a week at work or whatever, coming in on a Friday, we're usually locking in by like third song. That's pretty standard for us. And we've designed our opening songs to sort of let that moment happen and to free ourselves up. And so, you know, we want to have that group flow state happening. We want to lock in together. We want to, you know, feel the music moving through us and feel unified on that. And so this is an all for one, one for all mentality, right? We're like the three musketeers, you know, truly that's what we want to try to harness. And we try to take this off the stage as well. And for us, the key idea is it's first in, last out, all together. If you've come to this lesson by listening to the ones before it, you'll have already heard me talk about this in the podcast series, that I believe every band should take on a first in, last out mentality together. That coupled with All For One, One For All, we're all running gear together. We're all, you know, like helping each other with the heavy lifting. You know, there's going to be one person in the band. It's probably going to be the front person or the lead guitarist. Sometimes it's the drummer. It's just the stereotype. It's usually not the bass player. It might be him too. But someone's going to be kind of the spokesperson for the group as they're talking to individuals, you know, pre and post gig and kind of making connections. Okay, fair enough. Let that guy go do his thing. But if he's got time, he should be running back when the conversations are over. Help load out. Help do all the things. Don't be the meme. Again, we're the not a band. So we're not the meme where the lead singer doesn't do anything and he's always late. Nope, lead singer's there on time with everybody else. He carries his little bag and his guitar in. He drops that down and starts lifting the drums, the bass cab, the amps, whatever, right? And so these are some of the equality values we need to share in order to smooth out the sacredness of the stage and the music as well, as those are our highest values and everything we're doing. All of our behaviors, all of our mentality is supporting those two things to flourish. Key mentalities aside from this that we need to adopt and allow to sort of govern our behaviors is the idea of being curious. We should be taking our successes and our opportunity with a sense of curiosity and surprise. You will start to learn that you're becoming entitled when you're like, I deserve that, and now I deserve this, and now everyone needs to get out of my way, or needs to help me, or needs to As soon as you start to switch into this like self-centered even thought process, kind of just flag that. We want to approach our opportunities with curiosity, with surprise. It's truly an honor to be invited, especially as your band gets to the point where you're being requested more than you're asking. Because obviously in the early part of our local career as a startup or as a reconfiguring of a band or whatever, whatever you're listening to this, if you're new to it, you're going to be asking most of the time for gigs and you're going to be opening doors on your own. But eventually that'll start to flip if you find success and people start inviting you and asking you to events. That's where my band is at right now. We rarely ask for gigs. Most of our portfolio, and it's extensive, we can be booking a dozen or more shows a month. You know, we're being asked always to be playing gigs. And so we take that as a sense of honor. We take it with a sense of curiosity, a sense of appropriate privilege, and we want to chase down that lead and learn to see where that can go and how we can create in that environment and maybe sustain in that new environment. So coupled with this idea of curiosity and essentially thankfulness and a sense of adventure and opportunity, we want to chase every lead. The musical community and the artistic community can be pretty open-ended. There could be a lot of room to create a relationship that wasn't there before, right? By somebody in the crowd that loved you because they're a booking agent or they're part of a label or whatever, right? Like you can think of the most stereotypical outcomes or daydream moments that could happen to a band in the midst of a show, or you could think of other ways that, you know, they're less stereotypical on these amazing artistic environments or creative environments start to kind of unfold. And so the idea is chase every lead. If someone comes up to you and they're slimy and they want to make a music video with you and they've got this weird reputation, yeah, like you can lean away from that. But if somebody has a really cool opportunity and they're kind of pitching you an idea and you think it might be fun, I would encourage like chase every lead, even through just conversation or emails and then, you know, or messages on the socials or whatever, and see what's up and have an optimistic kind of view of creating in your community. Another great way to combat the rock star and entitled mentality and to be a not a band is to consider all your followers and fans as friends, and to really set a precedence and a hope that you'll get to know people instead of just viewing them and valuing them as people that think you're cool or want to listen to your music. With social media and the other things that are supporting your portfolio, you're going to be creating a lot of opportunity for people to get to know you. And it's been my experience, even in a large music center like Calgary, Alberta, is that we've gotten to know so many of what we would have called fans or followers. And to me, that's just so cringy. Like, we got to know these people. They're regularly going to shows. They're part of the hospitality community, going to bars, working at bars, right? It's like the people who are watching your gig, who are stoked about your band, share probably a similar temperament to you. They have a similar interest category. They're not fans of yours. Like, you're probably not that special, believe it or not. You might be able to create a cool moment or a series of cool songs or whatever, but those people might be as creative as you, as cool as you, as rock star as you in a different context. So really, we're all friends, and really we want to approach this as like members of a community together. And so I encourage people to like get to know everyone that shows interest in what you're doing and just start making a lot of friends. My band is a party band. That's essentially what we are at the bottom line. And we always say, why would I go to a party when I can be the party, right? And so that's a similar context to me. It's a similar concept. It's like, I want to be the party. I want to walk off that stage and high five people that liked my stuff and become their friend. I want to be the party. I want to be the friend. I want to hold this energy with my community and really celebrate it. And I would love to be able to walk into a venue and be able to call the entire crowd my friend, and now we'll share these intimate moments rocking out together, and we just vibe. And that's a beautiful thing. And you can see this as well in touring bands and at the highest level, where these bands start to create this amazing community, this amazing sense of belonging with their fans. And they don't know their names, but they kind of know what their archetype is. They know why people love their music, and they lean into it that way, and they create this sweetness with their following and with their crowd, and it feels intimate, it feels like family, it feels like friends. And that's the goal, and we can attain that goal even further in a local and smaller community as we grow by actually getting to know people and holding ourselves that way. Lastly, an amazing way we can combat the rock star mentality and the entitled mentality and to be a not a band is to really try to limit our intoxication pre or like during the gig. And I think there's a time where obviously you want to go for drinks with the guy who booked you or with the people who are partying with you and all these things, but I would really encourage you to limit your level of intoxication pre and during your gig. I think this will allow, obviously, for the most clarity of mind, the most organized situation you can have, the most thoughtful situation you can have. It'll limit the amount of stress. It'll limit just the ups and downs that would take place under what could be intoxication and everything that comes with that. So I don't think I need to talk about this a lot. I think the outcomes of being like pretty drunk before you play are usually pretty obvious. I think it's just super unprofessional. And it's fun to know that you did a really good job and to wake up the next day knowing that, like, man, we crushed it on the stage. We had clarity of mind, and then we went off and partied so hard with everyone afterwards, and the whole thing was just good. There's no hesitation or reservation about the evening before. Everything was like calculated and appropriate, and everyone really enjoyed what happened. So I think that's a really cool way to set the precedence for how your band operates and to have an agreement on that. It's brutal when the whole band is pretty sober and the one guy went off and kind of got wasted and he's kind of dragging everyone down with him, So I think it should be collaborative. I think that should be something what everyone can talk about, and then y'all can have a good time after the fact. Retain the sacredness of that stage and be aware of your decisions around substances that will induce intoxication pre and during your set. That being said, sometimes it's nice to have a shot to get loosened up, right? Or a celebratory pregame drink or whatever. But what I'm talking about is like next level intoxication, like just not being able to keep up or being hindered by the events that happen previous the stage moment. And obviously there's room for exploration and there's room for how you get in your vibe before you play, and just try to learn what that is. It might require some trial and error, and try to find the sweet spot so that you can vibe, you can loosen up, but you can also really commit to the most quality experience with your homies on that stage. So a couple just great rules that you can abide by and that will help set your mentality is, number one, gear or beer. When you show up at a venue, it's gear or beer. This is like an old dog, old school thing that I just absolutely love. You'll hear the old boy say this all the time. Gear or beer. If you're not getting gear, you're getting beer, period, right? And beer is like just the word, so go get food, go get whatever. But, as we're helping each other load in and kind of carrying the weight of the pre-stage moment together, you might find that you have yourself freed up, and so you walk around to all the buds, and you're like, Susie, what do you want? Joey, what do you want? Matt, what do you want? And you go around and you get the food, you get the pre-order in, or you figure out, you know, where's the tab at? Who's the server that's supposed to be with us? Is it the bartender? Whatever. Another amazing rule is that you should pack up and clean up as soon as you're done playing. You're going to want to probably go socialize right away. Again, there's going to be the spokesperson that I spoke about earlier in this segment, and it's, you know, they might want to step off the stage and immediately mingle. But it's been my experience after thousands of shows that, you know, most conversations right after the gig are kind of BS, right? Or it's just people showing some excitement, which are awesome. But, you know, you can be having those conversations and be packing your crap up. You know, you're probably going to have a good time after your gig. And it's been my experience as well that, you know, you might have something to do afterwards, but you're probably not getting out of there for an hour. Let's be honest. Everyone's like high-fiving. You're going to share, you know, some excitement about what just happened. People do want to talk. You do want to make the connection because your homies are in the room. Your friends are in the room. But, you know, you're going to get caught up in that moment. And if you've had a few drinks and, you know, your time went on, then all of a sudden you're forgetting stuff later in the night when you're packing up, or it's just frustrating, or you're playing somewhere where it's cold and now it's cold and you're like, I don't want to be loading up at this point. And so what we've always done as a band is as soon as we're done playing, you know, it takes, what, 5, 7, 10 minutes max just to pack your stuff up. Just get it in the corner of the room, get it where you know it's safe and it's ready to go. And then you can go tie one over and just have a good time with the room, and you're walking out of there completely organized at whatever state you're in. You know, you can stumble into your Uber and rip home, but life is good because, you know, Drew an hour ago, he had his shit together and he packed it up properly, and I can trust myself an hour ago and now I can just stumble into the Uber and get home, right? And in closing this episode, you know, another major vibe that can come along with a rock star mentality or an entitled mentality is what we believe our worth is. And I did speak to this a little bit at length in the money episode, but, you know, so many times I've talked to people who really display these rock star behaviors and they're just popping off about the money or what they think they're worth. And it's honestly, it's 9 times out of 10, it's so cringy. Because usually it's in a local environment and it's like, bro, how, like, who do you think you are? It's like, obviously you're not Elvis, bro. You're not the Beatles. Like, they talk like they are. And again, don't be those people. Chasing opportunity and acquiring opportunity is so much more important than chasing money. Truly, this is a concept that if you're listening to this, you really have to let sink in. Opportunity is more important than money. Every time, because I tell you, if you find the right opportunities, they will produce the money. And so we want to approach everything from a sense of curiosity and opportunity and excitement and chase every lead and doing the best job we can do, our personal best, all these different things. And so please do not, in the early days of your local career or of your startup band, get all screwed up about money and who you think you are. And I put 100 minutes into this song or 100 hours into the song or whatever it was, and so it deserves this attention. Your value will be reflected by your journey and how you approach with the right mentality and how you create success in community. And, you know, that will come to you. Give it time, hold yourself the right way, and the money and the success and the friends and the opportunity and all of it will come. But we need to position ourselves fundamentally with the right mentality, the right worldview, and we need to let that, you know, affect the way we conduct ourselves. We need to believe it. We need to live it. We need to harness that as a team. The team that is your band needs to approach these things the same way. We're going to position ourselves this way. We're going to approach our community this way. And, you know, that's going to affect the way that people love you. Truly, they're going to truly love you if you do it like this. I can promise you that. And, you know, when you're out before the gig, you know, the week after and shit went down and it was horrible. And yeah, you need to vent with each other and just, you know, talk about all the most horrible things in the scene and the worst case scenarios. Yeah, there's room for that, but we're not leading with those, you know, hardships. We're not carrying that with us into the next relationship, you know. Yeah, we're gonna have a locker room moment, so to speak, you know, where the band is just popping off about the most frustrating moments that have happened, but we're not conducting ourselves that way. Everything's innocent before proven guilty as we get into the next opportunity, and we're creating synergy everywhere we go. The early days of any gigging band are filled with twists and turns and a lot of nuances, and it's in those times that you want to be able to reflect with somebody who's traveled that path and can provide insights to you to make sure that your head is staying on straight, that you're not getting jaded, that you're not getting entitled, and that you can approach a situation the right way after a little bit of reflection, a little bit of guidance, or you can prepare for the next one appropriately. And if you're looking for somebody to help you do that, you can go to my website, www.thefrontiersteam.ca, and jump on a call with me and let's get you going on the artist mentorship program. It's 1, 2, or 3 sessions at a super reasonable cost where we develop your mentality, we develop your band, your assets, website, socials, whatever you're needing. We do a full evaluation in the first session together, and then we set the stage. What do you need? What's working? What's not working? How do we make you better as a group, right? We can do this one-on-one or we can do it with the group. So again, that's www.thefrontiersteam.ca, and looking forward to that moment with you and seeing you in the next episode.
The moon is shining in my heart. Shining in my heart. The moon is shining. Shining in my heart. The moon is shining. Shining in my heart. The darkness came and I knew I was staring into defeat. The darkness came but I learned how. But I learned how to get up from my sleep. Makes me sing like love.